Hello and welcome to another episode of the Film Stage Show. I am Brian Rowan, your host, and again, this is the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. Joining me today is writer for the Film Stage, Danny King.
Hey.
Hey. We usually have a third co-host here. For anyone who listens, you know, it's associate editor Nick Newman. Unfortunately, he could not be here with us, so you are stuck alone with Danny and I. I hope you don't mind. Before we jump into the show, a little bit of general information. We will be doing a news discussion topic, then going into our primary review, which will be this week's new release, Pixar's Brave. And then we'll be talking about movies that are coming out, give you our best bets on all of those on DVD and theatrical release. And then we'll give you a personal pick from our own DVD libraries, something that we've seen in the last week that we think you should check out. I encourage you to subscribe to us on iTunes and to give us a little rating and a comment, because things like that are important, and I'm not entirely sure how. But it would be great if you could give them to us anyway. And if you ever need to talk to us, you can always get in touch with us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. So, to begin today, we will be having our, you know, brief current event discussion topic, which this week we wanted to talk about. In the run-up to Brave, there was a lot of conversation about the idea that Pixar had to rebound from Cars 2, which, you know, was, I'm sure it was financially successful, but critically not so much. And that Brave was their way to kind of show that they could still make a really artful and well-made and touching movie, which I don't feel like a film studio that has put out such wonderful films as The Incredibles and every Toy Story film and Up and Ratatouille really has to prove that they can still do that just because they didn't do it once. But apparently people had that opinion. So we wanted to talk about either brands or artists who we feel are in decline. And then we wanted to talk about the reasons that we think they may be in decline. Like, what is leading to this? I guess it's an atrophying of their talents or their output. So, Danny, what do you feel are a couple of really big sort of brand name stars or directors or production companies that in recent years have been on a downward slope?
Well, I think we can start with Ridley Scott, which makes for a timely choice.
Definitely a timely choice.
Yeah, because if you look at two of his first three movies, Alien and Blade Runner are possibly the two most acclaimed and most respected of his career still to this day. And the one movie that he did kind of get a bunch of Academy recognition for, Gladiator, is one that people really don't even think about much anymore. And I don't know if I personally think he's declined so much. I really like American Gangster, which he made just 4 or 5 years ago. And even Prometheus, if it's not on the same level of like Alien, it's still clearly he's got some chops. But I just think the material he's been going after lately is kind of very erratic. If you look at things like A Good Year.
I totally forgot about that one.
Yeah, you just forget that that's a Ridley Scott film, and it's Russell Crowe and Marion Cotillard, and it's just kind of strange that he would attach himself to something like that.
I definitely agree with that. And I do, it is funny though that you say he still maintains his status as a great director, but the material that he's directing just doesn't bear any kind of support for that. Like, it doesn't seem like it needs his directorial touch.
Yeah. And in some ways, I appreciate that he's kind of going after different things, but the results indicate kind of that he's having trouble getting a grip on them or getting a grip on material that he could really make sing like he did before.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, we talk about a great director and you just kind of assume that they are in complete control and that they can, you know, polish shit into a diamond, I guess is a really rough way to put it. But Ridley Scott is one of these people who, in looking at his work, you really can tell that if he doesn't have like some strong writing supporting him, it's just not going to work out.
And, yeah.
You know, like you said, it's great that he goes out and does these other things, but it just kind of shows that more of a stylist, I guess. Which is, you know, a rough thing to put on him when he has made such, you know, cerebral and you know, large films. But it's just kind of like the more he does now, the harder it is to really get behind that assertion.
Yeah. And I'm like those same kind of drawbacks could be applied to like Tim Burton, who's another person I thought about in terms of like no real storytelling consistency, just more of a kind of stylist each time out. probably even more so than Scott in terms of like whatever the story is, like he's gonna go for his crazy production design kind of thing.
Yeah, because Scott, you know, you can look at his movies and you can tell that they're kind of his, no matter, you know, Prometheus takes place in space, Aliens takes place in space, Blade Runner takes place in the distant future. Maybe not so distant anymore.
Yeah.
you can still feel his stamp on it, even though he does make his films feel as though they're an actual part of that environment. Probably not putting that the best way possible. But, you know, he adapts his style for the film that he's making, at least in terms of environment, whereas Tim Burton kind of grinds up the story and then, yeah, like, hot injection molds it into this, like, mold that he has. Or it's like, we need curly cues and black and white, and that's all we're going to have. So, yeah, I would definitely say Burton, maybe not even in decline, just, like, maybe just stopped just trying.
Eternal inconsistency. Just...
Yeah, which is sad because you do look at some of his earlier work. We were talking before the podcast, and I brought up Batman, and Batman is still a beautiful, you know, gothic depiction of this dystopian world. And you know, the original short, the black and white short that he did, Frankenweenie, like that was a really good short. And there's something behind that. But the more he's kind of become entrenched in the fact that people like this one style that he's kind of been mining, the more he galvanized that style.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at Wikipedia here, and one of the patterns you notice is that like he wrote more earlier on in his career. He wrote the Frankenweenie short, he wrote Edward Scissorhands, The Nightmare Before Christmas, and then after that in 1993 he hasn't written a movie since this year's Frankenweenie, which is a pretty glaring trend, kind of like just 10 years of no work on the page.
Yeah, he didn't even direct The Nightmare Before the Christmas though.
Yeah, true.
But, I mean, like, he produced it and he made the story, but, you know, that's... And I guess, you know, Selleck, who did make that, Henry Selleck, you can almost say that, you know, he's the type of director more like Ridley Scott, where he had the writing and then adapted the style that he was using to tell the story to the writing.
Mm-hmm.
I do like Selleck a lot, though. He did James and the Giant Peach and another stop motion fairly recently, Coraline.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked each of those films.
Yeah.
So not in decline. Good work, Henry Selleck. Sorry to bring you up in this terrible company. Now, I mean, we're going to get into talking about Pixar's Brave, so we might as well just bring up this idea. Do you think Pixar is in decline, or do you think that people have just been kind of, I guess, overindulged by Pixar in the past, and that to deliver a simply good product is no longer good enough?
I feel like to apply the word decline to Pixar is a little bit absurd, considering that it's really only Cars 2 that is making them say that. Because you look at the movies that came before Cars 2, Wall-E, Up, Toy Story 3, Ratatouille, like these are some of the most beloved films the studio's ever made. So it's like one misfire. To just label that a decline is a little bit silly. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of Brave, but even after that, I wouldn't say like, oh, this studio's a complete mess and it's going to the flames. Like... It's so hard to make a good movie every time out, and they did it for so long.
Right. And I was saying, you know, even if I mean, I never saw Cars 2, and part of it was because I'd heard such bad things that I didn't kind of want to be poisoned against them. Like, I feel like a lot of other people have. I saw Brave. I enjoyed it. Like I said, we'll get into it more in the review. But it's just weird that, I guess, you know, you need a narrative when you're pushing forward a story on a news site. And, you know, Pixar makes one-off, not very great film. Doesn't sound as great as, like, you know, Cars 2 is awful. Is Pixar, like, going down?
Yeah, it's, like, tempting to try and make a narrative where there really isn't one.
Right, because people had been trying to say that when they were going back for Toy Story 3, you know, they looked at the slate and they're like, Toy Story 3, Cars 2, Brave, and then Monsters University. And they said, uh-oh, you know, four films, two sequels, and a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this is a studio in decline. And then Toy Story 3 came out. Everyone was stunned by it. You know, it was a fantastic film. And so I guess they had to readjust, and they were just really happy when Cars 2 was, you know, as critically ill-received as everyone hoped it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like people want to see it fail?
The studio?
Yeah. Or? Like, is there kind of like a thing where you want to instill a little bit of hubris in Pixar?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, it's weird to imagine someone wanting them to fail just because what they represent is so unique in terms of like bridging adult and like child sensibilities.
Right.
So it's like hard for me to imagine someone who would just want to take an axe to Pixar and be like, they're done. But like, I guess that's kind of what's happening with some people, but it's not something that I could fathom feeling.
Yeah, I can't fathom it personally, but I feel as though there might be something of that there,
mm-hmm.
which to me is just odd. Like, this rooting for failure or rooting for some kind of disaster, you know, people were really looking forward to Battleship tanking at the box office. It's like, well, why would you wish that on something? Like, I understand if you don't think it deserves accolades, like, that's fine, but like, why would you hope that an investment like that fails spectacularly?
Like, why go out of your way to like actively hate something?
Yeah, it's odd to me. And like, you know, we talk about artists in decline. I feel like it's safe. Not even safe, that's a bad word. It is right and just to say that Tim Burton or Ridley Scott may be declining or have lost a handle on something and might need to get back into it. You could almost say, like, yeah, I'm not going to get into it too much, but like, people have said that Francis Ford Coppola, you know, at some point just stopped making good movies. I haven't seen either of his two more recent independent films, though both very much interested me. But I mean, it's okay to say that because we've had 20 years to watch Ridley Scott kind of flail around. Mm-hmm. And sure, I enjoy Black Hawk Down, and sure, Gladiator is still thrilling to watch, but they don't stick with you the way that others have of his works. And it just seems weird to me that we're trying, well, not me personally, and probably not you either, but just the industry is trying to peg Pixar in this way.
Yeah, it is kind of a strange backlash that's happening. And the other thing with it is that this will be something that's interesting to reassess maybe in a few months, because there is this internet rush that kind of occurs when a movie just comes out. I remember like some tweets about Prometheus. Some industry guys would tweet things like, you know, me and my friends are still talking about this movie days after the screening. That never happens. And now every tweet you seem to read about Prometheus says, oh, second viewing, it's not as good or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like there's clearly a constant flip-flopping going on in terms of what the narrative is this week or what it is next week.
Yeah, and I believe I've brought this up in a few of our discussions before, that this kind of instant communication system that we've set up, mm-hmm. you know, Facebook and Twitter, and constantly being kind of pushed to air our thoughts on something is really like negatively affecting us. Because, you know, when you feel anything towards something, your feelings are going to change and they're going to continue to swing until they finally reach an equilibrium where you actually know for certain what you feel. And so to have this like paper trail of all the times that you changed your mind or reevaluated something, really detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've had to deal with something like that yet, but that might just be because I'm obstinate. And once I make up my mind on something, it's hard to change it. Not to say that I wouldn't go back and give something a try again. But, you know, it's just, I'm not one of those people who, I'm also not putting myself out there that much. I don't feel like I'm that interesting. But if these people are in decline, you know, we're not making any hard judgments here. Anyone who's writing an angry email. But what do you think would be, I guess, the worst genesis behind that? Like, looking at Burton, looking at Scott, looking at, you know, possibly Pixar, just trying to once again hypothetically examine that. Like, if the decline is actually true, what do you think would be the reason behind it? Like, the most solid excuse for why these things might be happening?
Well, I mean, I guess Pixar, the most obvious way to look at that was just kind of the sequelitis, prequelitis. Burton just seems, I mean, it's hard to like locate a roadmap, but like I said, he's just kind of less interested in putting his voice into the storytelling as opposed to just designing his sets that he has fun with. But I think one of the things about these declines are that make them interesting is it's hard to exactly locate why they happen. Like you mentioned Coppola, and it's like you just look at his filmography and you look at where he's been in the last couple of years, and it's just so strange that to try and explain it is almost less interesting than just observing it, because it's like hard, it would be so hard to pinpoint a reason.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. If I had to choose a reason for Burton, I mean, never having been the largest fan of his work, I could say that he's just a guy who was told yes too many times. He just realized he could get away with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's not true, but I feel like someone at some point needs to tell that man no. Scott, I think I already made my opinions clear on him. You know, he's great. He's not a storyteller, though, and he needs a story that can not support him, but do service to what he can do for the story. story. And Pixar, you know, I just don't understand why people are saying it. I think it could be sequelitis, but again, it's Toy Story 3, Toy Story 2 were great.
Yeah.
And Monsters University, I have yet to see the trailer because I was expecting to see it before Brave. Sorely disappointed on that. But, I mean, those are still great. And if Cars 2 isn't that great, you know, studios still got to keep the lights on. Like, I can get it. And I don't know. Like,
and they have the shorts, you know. A lot of people think the shorts are still universally brilliant. A lot of people think La Luna is, like, one of their best shorts. And I haven't seen enough of them to say that, but it is a great little movie.
I've seen, I think, almost every one of their shorts. La Luna is definitely up there. I think Presto, which I don't remember what it aired before, but it deals with a magician and his rabbit.
Mm.
If you saw that one, that might still be my favorite.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you have to.
Tragically.
But yeah.
Are they online, or do you just, DVD? Or
Usually they come with the DVD of whatever movie they came with. I think Pixar also publishes a shorts collection.
Maybe I'll email Pixar and be like, please mail me all of your shorts. Thank you.
Let's try to flex our critic creds here and try to make some movement on that. I mean, what's the point of doing this if we're not going to get free stuff?
Really? Exactly. Come on, Pixar.
I think that we've basically come to the end of this discussion, though. We haven't really come to any conclusions, but that's not the point of these. The point of these is just to put an idea out there, explore it. And hey, if any of you listening at home have an opinion, or someone that you think is in decline that we forgot, or if you'd like to defend Tim Burton, God help you, email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. But now is the time when we can get into our main review, which is of Pixar's newest film, Brave.
With our laws, the firstborn of each of the great leaders must prove their worth. Merida, stop!
A lady enjoys elegant pursuits.
I present my only son. He took out a whole armada single-handedly. He was with one arm, he was stealing the ship.
I want my freedom. But are you willing to pay the price your freedom will cost?
Careful what you wish for, my mother would say.
What's the worst that could happen?
Okay, so Brave, the film by Pixar, directed by Mark Andrews, Brenda Chapman, and co-directed by Steve Purcell. This stars the voice talents of Kelly MacDonald, Billy Connolly, Emma Thompson, and Robbie Coltrane, along with Kevin McKidd and Craig Ferguson. For anyone who doesn't know, Brave is the story of a strong-willed, red-haired Scottish princess who is set to be betrothed to a son from one of the neighboring clans, but decides to kind of strike out on her own and build her own future. I'm being just as vague as all of the marketing was, but I feel like there's a good reason for that. If you'd like more, wait for spoilers. But for now, we're just going to talk about our general feelings towards Brave. So, Danny, why don't you kick us off and tell us what you thought of Brave?
I enjoyed maybe the first half hour. It's a lot of the conflict that is set up feels familiar in terms of this like arranged marriage stuff, but it's nicely written and the animation is gorgeous and it really works in the beginning. And then there's a plot point that we'll talk about more later. And it comes earlier on than you would think, considering how kind of crazy it is. And after that, the movie kind of just devolved for me into one weird kind of action scene after the next. Like, just looking back on the movie, the last hour around just felt almost like one giant chase sequence to get to the end. And I found myself very unmoved by the kind of mother-daughter dynamic that they try to go after. And I mean, I give them points for making kind of a bold narrative gesture. It's very weird. But kind of the whole second half of the movie, I just looked at some of these scenes and I just couldn't believe what I was watching almost. It was so out there and it didn't really work for me.
Yeah, the movie, you know, you talk about the narrative twist. It does come earlier than you expect. Maybe
just
because,
yeah,
just the way that movies have been set up recently, you kind of expect that you've seen everything but the last 15 minutes in trailers.
Yeah.
Like, you expect if there's going to be some kind of reveal, it's going to be late in the game, like third act plot twist or reveal. This one is like the end of the first act. And it's really, really weird. It's it does take you back because you're like, okay, wait, this is the movie I'm watching now? But I liked it. I thought it was interesting. I liked the fact that they made a large paradigm shift early in the game that was still going to play into the film. And I get what you're saying about the chase feel. There is a definite, like, almost like a quest scenario, you know, a constantly moving, trying to figure things out sort of rhythm to everything that's going on. It's hard to debate the story that much right now when we're not in spoilers. So I'll let that stand for now. But I will say that animation, of course, is like fantastic in this. There were times when I was actually distracted by the main character's hair.
Yeah, seriously. It's like amazing.
Like it's like Merida's hair. Merida is the princess. Her hair is like alive. Like if you watch footage of a real human being with like insanely curly hair, like run it, like that's real, it's there, and it's just like it's so good that it kind of almost sometimes takes you out of it. Like if you see a really interesting action scene in a movie, like you'll be so focused on how awesome the action is that it'll take you out of the story. It's like every time she moves her head.
Yeah. And there's one scene early on where she it's like the day where she's supposed to pick her suitor and her mom puts her in this really tight dress that covers her hair, and I was just so mad at the mom. Like,
yeah,
show that hair off.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I did make a joke, though, that was probably, like, that sequence was probably the sequence that the animators liked the most.
With the
with the head thing on? Yeah. Like, thank God we do not have to animate that goddamn hair.
Yeah.
I mean, other than that, you know, the characters were interesting design-wise, and the humor I liked. I especially like the fact that there's a lot of quick motion in this, a lot of moving through space, and there's a lot of humor going on in the background. Pixar is really good at making like a big lived-in world, and they did it again in this. Like it's you know, they have a thing where like tertiary and like I can't think of what like the next step beyond tertiary is, but like just characters way in the background are doing something interesting. And I appreciated that. And I like it when things like that happen. And again, like I feel like this movie is going to catch a lot of flack just because it's Pixar and, you know, they made Up and they made Ratatouille and they've brought grown men to tears. But like I bought into all the relationships that I think the movie wanted me to. Maybe not to the extent that I maybe bought into the relationship between Russell and Carl.
Yeah.
You know, but you can't expect that every movie. And I was still brought in more than I'm brought in on many live action films that I've seen this year. And so, you know, measured as a movie in and of itself against a lot of other films, you know, kind of taken in a vacuum like you try to take most films, I really liked this film. I thought the action was well directed. There's a fight scene towards the end that was, you know, just like gripping and you're like, holy crap, what's going to happen? Wow, it's really difficult to talk about this without talking about spoilers. But yeah, and like I said, I can see where you're coming from with the kind of critique of like the devolving of the story from something perhaps a little more nuanced and interesting into like the final act chase.
Yeah, it was just kind of narrative problems that bugged me. And yeah, just like I just felt like it was just beating me over the head with just action scene after action scene.
Was it like wearying or numbing to you, or did you just
less numbing than it was like I was just kind of not even, I was just totally unengaged with the movie at a certain point. And like we keep saying, there's a plot point that it'll be more interesting to go into, but like there are scenes where I just couldn't believe what I was watching.
Yeah. I think I can understand what you're saying about that. And there's a vague inevitability and perfunctoriness to the story.
Like, and I guess it's funny too, because we keep talking about Up, and like that movie is about a guy who flies in a balloon house.
Yeah.
And for some reason, you know, just totally different reactions from me.
I think part of that might have to do with your engagement with the character. You know, not to say like, you know, Merida is the kind of character that, you know, you're on her side almost immediately and you can recognize her flaws. And they're almost terrible because you can recognize them as your own. There's a lot of things that happen in this movie where you're like, yeah, I guess if I had that ability, I probably would have exercised it and gone through the same crap. Up, unfortunately, you know, Up shows you this entire man's life and brings you through this like sweeping tragedy.
Yeah.
Like I've never been more immediately on the side of a character than I was in Up. And again, like, you know, you expect that from a Pixar film, and I guess it's upsetting in a way that this movie you have to sell for just liking a character instead of feeling like you intimately know every ounce of pain that's expressed in their eyes. I don't know. I can get that. And like I said, there are aspects of this film that feel kind of like one of the plot points that's, you know, it's not a spoiler to say there are these little glowing will-o-wisp lights that you've seen the character kind of following in trailers, and they really are just like a path to the next plot point.
Yeah,
but the movie deals so much in fate and destiny that like you can kind of get around that, and I was willing to forgive it that.
Yeah, but there's the fate voiceover.
Yeah, the two fate voiceovers.
Yeah,
at least. But yeah, I mean, still gorgeous, still stunning. There are still, you know, almost silent grace notes that, you know, really, you know, kind of burrow beneath your skin a little bit more than a normal film would do. And this film is one that strives for more than just entertainment and does have a message. And I liked it. I would say go see it. Maybe not immediately. And I saw it in 3D. I don't think it's that important that you see it in 3D. But this is definitely one to see in theaters. And when it comes out on DVD, I will probably be buying it. What would you say as far as recommendation goes?
Less full of a recommendation. I don't really have a desire to see it again soon. I didn't really like it.
Well, you can say that. You're allowed to see the film. Do you regret seeing it?
I don't regret seeing it just because I want to see, you know, the new Pixar movie just to be informed. But I really didn't like it. The last hour was like just a really not fun viewing experience. And like I said, I think the setup was good. Even if it was familiar, it worked for me. And then it went off the rails.
Well, that being said, I think it's clear that we've exhausted as much as we can without getting into spoilers. So, spoilers! Why don't you start off by saying what you felt in that last hour specifically was bringing you down?
Like, just, I think the easiest way for me to say it is just describe some of the scenes where I was just kind of very confused.
Yeah, no, go for it.
There's like a montage where, well, first of all, like the mom turns into a bear.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere.
And at first I thought she was dead or something.
Yeah.
She was like on the ground.
It was about to get dark. But yeah, she turned into a bear. Was not expecting that.
Yeah, so the mom's a bear.
And actually, you know, just starting from that point, that was the moment where the movie really could have lost me.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like, the, oh no, I turned my sibling, neighbor, whatever, into a duck is, like, one of those plots that's just kind of, I don't know, it's been, like, done before, and oftentimes it's done really poorly. But I thought that the movie actually pulled off at least that, you know, pretty well. Do you at least feel like the actual moment of transformation and, like, its integration into the story was okay? You can say no.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think about like the specific moment because it's just so unexpected,
so
that
out of left field.
Yeah, it's hard to like say, it's hard to like label something like that like a seamless transition just because it's so jarring.
Yeah. Do you think it could have been done better?
I just think it's such a weird move.
Yeah. It's such an odd choice. Like I was thinking about that and I was like, is there a way that this drastic shift could have been modulated where I would have been okay with it?
Yeah, and one of the thing that just I was thinking about for a little bit at the beginning is like she goes to this witch because she doesn't want to have to marry anyone, and it just like it was weird to me that her, what she thought was the most convenient way to not have to marry someone was to like change her mom.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was like a simpler way, like, oh, like make my kingdom like not have to make me marry someone or something.
I guess,
and that was just like a weird small thing that I thought of.
I thought that too, but there is a definite, like the movie almost is less about like the societal pressure on her than the pressure she feels coming through her mom, like channel, like society's pressure channeled through her mother. So it kind of made sense to me.
Yeah, it was just like that one moment she goes to the witch and I wasn't expecting her to say like, I need this potion for my mom. I thought she was going to just like ask for it for herself or something and just be like, make me so I don't have to marry someone.
Yeah.
And I don't know how witches work.
Yeah.
But that was just a small thing. Well, and once the move does happen, like just there's a scene where like her and the mom are fishing and she's showing the mom how to eat fish. And it was like so strange.
But I loved that scene.
Yeah, I mean
like that's one of the scenes I was talking about, like the grace note, the nearly silent, like.
And it's in comparison with everything else, it's definitely like a pause for a graceful note because everything else is so frenetic.
Yeah.
And so I guess I like it for that reason. But it was like that scene and a few others where I just was so turned off by like what I was watching. I don't know. She was feeding her mom fish and like she was a bear.
It's like, I feel like a lot of it's just gonna come from the fact like her mom is a bear.
Yeah.
It's a very, like I said, it's a very bold interesting choice to make. And I think it does depend on how much you maybe like felt for this story between, you know, a daughter and her mother, and, you know, for all the other choices they make, obviously. But I feel like any problems you had with the film could be exacerbated by the fact that you're now like constantly having to say that Bear is her mom.
Exactly. And the other thing is there's some like, and this obviously ties into like the theme of fate, but there's some focus on like the history of the kingdom.
Yeah.
That just feels a little bit random.
To me it was kind of like the opposite of random, but still in a random way. Like, obviously, you know, there's going to be the story about this kingdom. Obviously, it's going to come up again. Obviously, it's going to tie into this story somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of felt random only in that, like, the times they bring it up.
Like, I like the history with the dad and the bear.
Yeah, that was
kind of
awesome.
Just a fun, like, rivalry. And obviously, it comes into play later when he comes across the mom. But, like, there's maybe, like, a 10-minute sequence where she, like, figures out that someone before her like got under the spell and turned into a bear as well.
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't know, it just felt like not very vital information. It was just kind of weird.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. There's the story that they tell is of the four brothers who split up their father's kingdom, and then one brother wants more power, so he starts a war. And then he apparently runs into the same witch, asks for a potion to give him the strength of 10 men, and gets turned into a bear. This witch has, like, one trick, that she's just, like, really happy that people aren't specific about their requests. Like, I imagine, like, someone would say, like, you know, I want to be, you know, strong and agile. And she's like, oh, that works for a bear. I can make him a bear. And like someone wants, like, I want to be the best hunter ever. It's, oh, bears are pretty good hunters. You can be a bear. Like, I just imagine this witch like constantly having to internally convince herself that a bear potion is the right move. I really hope they make like a kind of sidequel. Oh God, what an awful word. Like a parallel story, like a short about this witch and all these people who come to her. And it's like, I want to find true love. It's like, oh, well, it's bear mating season. I can turn you into a bear. Way off track. That was just something I had to get out because I've been thinking about that. I was like, really, two people and you turn them both into a bear? But she does carve a lot of bears, so she has a thing she likes. She sticks to it.
Interesting personality.
I would say that the witch showing up for me at first was like a crazy thing. You get this idea like of a movie and then you go in and it's something completely different.
Yeah.
Than what you expect. So I'm actually, one of the reasons I want to see this again is just like knowing what's going to happen and not being taken quite so off guard. I wonder how that's going to affect it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting because I like for the second half of the movie, I was almost wondering if that bear thing was in the trailer because I'd only seen the trailer like once and I didn't really remember it. So I was kind of wondering if other people were like expecting something like this.
I don't think so. I've seen all the trailers they put out and I had no inclination that there would be the mom turning into a bear. There's
and
like
the bear,
a scene.
The bear thing isn't a lot of reviews too, which is like kind of iffy.
Oh yeah, I didn't put that in my review.
Yeah,
like I was writing my review, I was like, well, they didn't say it in the marketing. I usually try to do that. Like in my review, I will try not to give out more than the marketing did, and sometimes I even have to scale it back. Like Prometheus, when I wrote my review, scaled it way the hell back. Yeah, I feel like I avoid reviews specifically for that reason. Because every once in a while you get that one critic who's like, yeah, Bruce Willis is dead at the end. Why would you tell me that? Like, if it's so important to your critique, you know, write your review, but then write a scholarly essay afterwards.
Yeah.
But no, in the trailers, there is a scene of her, I believe, walking with a bear behind her. But there's, again, no inclination that it's going to be her mom.
That's not an assumption you'd make.
No. So I figured that this is sort of off topic. What I had perceived this movie as being was that the bear had tried to kill her father, that everyone was going after the bear, or the bear was seen as some kind of malevolent curse on the kingdom, and that she somehow was going to defeat or befriend the bear and earn her independence through showing that she was as capable as anyone else.
That seems like it would be a pretty decent narrative.
Oh, thank you. Hollywood, take note. Not expecting that a mom would turn into a bear.
Yeah.
And I will agree that they do shoehorn in... How do we get so far off topic? They do shoehorn in this story of the four brothers and the eventual reveal that this malevolent bear is the fourth brother who wanted, you know, to take over. And then, like, when the bear dies, like, his spirit rises out of the bear and he kind of gives this knowing nod, like, sorry, I fucked up. And you were fighting for like 300 years because of it.
Strange moment.
It was a strange moment. I feel like things like that could have been fleshed out or integrated more, but still a fan of the movie.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, it's hard to argue with what you're saying. I can't really refute your claims. I can say that you're right, but they didn't bother me as much.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, because I wouldn't, like, you know, I wouldn't diss, like, the movie's heart and say, like, it doesn't have a heart. I just, like, it's just the, like, the constant just action of the second half just I didn't enjoy. And it's most of the movie, so.
Yeah. No, I can get behind that because, you know, there, once it hits its stride with the bear stuff, like that, that one scene with the fish is like the only moment where it slows down.
Yeah.
So I can see that. I can get behind that. It was hurried, maybe is the right word. Just more frenetic than it should have been to maintain the heart at the center of the story instead of just making the spectacle the main draw.
Mm-hmm.
Because you do expect that more from a Pixar film. Again, this is unfair to say, but you do. And you want that heart to come through. Especially, like, I cared about these characters. You know, being 25, you know, not so far out of that stupid rebellious teen phase, I can look back on all the times that I argued with my mother or father in almost the same way that this girl did in the movie and just be like, ah, it's a stupid decision. But I did that. Like, so I still have that perspective on it and I still know what that's like. And so I wanted to see that worked out and to see the mom turned into a bear. Again, knocked me on my heels a bit. It was nice, you know, that fishing scene where she's kind of like, you know, proving to her mom her own independence, you know, her ability to do this. Like, you got a 14-year-old girl, maybe, like, catching fish with her bare hands and her mom's a bear and can't do it.
I mean, yeah, it's like she's teaching her.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I like stuff like that. Like, these are characters that I cared about and I could empathize with. And it was a little disheartening to see them treated like, you know, action figures at some point. Though, the ending for me, you know, there's a plot point about having to bind what was broken.
Yeah.
Again, though, very specific thing that witch, you know, I don't know how she knew about it, but luckily, you know, in both cases where she turned someone into a bear, that person had also broken something symbolic of their relationship with other people.
Yeah, it's like you said before, it's these things that were clearly thought out, but still feel very, like, flung in.
Yeah, because the second that that woman, the witch has, like, this... I actually liked the idea of the answering machine almost.
Oh, that was funny.
Yeah, like, you know, the witch's face, like, pops up in smoke in a cauldron. It's like, if you're that crazy red-haired girl, pour in the second vial. The third vial.
I think it was the third.
So that was fun. But, you know, the second she said that, I was like, oh, you got to fix the tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it takes them a while to figure that out. But at the same time, I was like, well, maybe that's the obvious answer and it's not right. Because not only, and I still think that I could be incorrect in just assuming it's the tapestry. Because not only does she fix the tapestry, she mends her issues with her mom, and she unites the three kingdoms in a way that doesn't involve just marrying her off.
Yeah.
So a lot of prideful, broken bonds. You know, one of them worked.
Yeah, and there's that point where she, like, gets locked in the room, and she still has the tapestry with her, but she tries for a couple minutes to, like, break out of the room before she tries to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I wondered, you know, maybe that wasn't, like, the only thing.
Yeah,
if it was, like, just start sewing.
Yeah, I'll just chill here. I'll sew it. But, you know, I guess at that point there's so many balls in the air because not only does she have to fix the tapestry,
yeah, she has to, like, save her.
She has to save her mom from getting killed by her father.
Yeah,
and she I don't know if she needed to put the tapestry over her mom while she was a bear, but it came in handy. Considering that the mom was then completely naked.
And then the kids.
The brothers were something that I thought I wouldn't like, but I actually ended up liking a lot.
Yeah, they were pretty funny.
Yeah, because at first I was like, oh, you know, the crazy kid brothers. But, like, they were so manically mischievous. And again, they weren't front and center a lot. They were sort of in, like, the background doing their madness. So I think things like that, modulating the storytelling, not getting stuck on the slapstick brothers, and still managing to tell a story that was interesting and, you know, left you questioning what was going on was good. Though I, you know, again, I have to admit that the craziness and the nonstop action, you know, undermines the story slightly more for you than me, obviously.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this film before we move on?
I think it has a very accurate title, because she is quite brave.
She is brave.
So I would add that.
The original title for this was The Bow and the Bear, correct?
Oh, I don't know.
I think that was what it was initially called, which is another thing that I was wondering, because there's a point where the mother throws her bow into the fire.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if it was going to come up that not only did the tapestry need to be mended, but the bow as well. That never came up. I think that could have been an interesting thing, because it wouldn't have put all of the onus so much on Marita.
Yeah.
And also, it would have been hilarious to see a bear try to fix a bow. But, you know, what can you do? But yeah, so, I don't know. I wish I could defend the movie better than I have, but this is such, like, I feel like our issues with it are so subjective.
Yeah.
That it'd be difficult for us to convince one another either way. But yeah, that's our review of Brave. I again say that you should see it. Danny didn't like it. Would you actively try to dissuade someone from seeing it?
I would just send them in maybe with some headlights on. Just be like, you might not dig this one, and don't take it out on me afterwards. That's how I'd go about doing it.
Okay. Well, I would almost unreservedly say that people should see this. Just don't expect Up. But again, I feel like it's unfair, because like people, I'm sure, went to Madagascar 3 not expecting Up. And, you know, people were like, oh, that's a pretty good movie. And this one, they're like, well, I didn't cry in the first 10 minutes, so fuck you, Pixar, you're letting me down. I guess that's kind of Pixar's fault. You know, stop making such good movies and we won't keep expecting such good movies. You know, how dare you?
Yeah, there's a terrible crime.
There's some kind of idiom about you succeed up to your own level of incompetence, or like, you know, you treat people. I can't even think of what it is, but it's something about like how much you should stop at some point. Like, you know, no matter how good you are, you should stop like 10% below what you're actually capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you hit that peak and you never go back to it, people are going to continue to say, like, he lost it, he never had it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Pixar, I'm sure they're going to pick it up. I like, they have such great people working there, and I'm sure that they've inspired, you know, new storytellers who are going to come in and continue to replenish them. That I don't feel like they're going to reach a decadent period where they fall to pieces like Disney did for a while.
Yeah.
But I feel like they might be a victim of that.
That's yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, a lot of their stuff in the future sounds really intriguing. So
I'm still pissed that production was stopped on Newt.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now. What was that exactly?
Newt was, I think one of the reasons they may have stopped was because there was a movie that came out called Rio. Which apparently I never saw. Newt was basically Rio, but with newts. Which I from the age of like 3, I've been obsessed with reptiles and amphibians. I now own a lizard and a snake. Like, I love them. So I was really excited to see a movie about a newt, just on principle alone. And I liked the idea of an endangered newt who has to breed with another one of these newts, but like they hate each other. And I felt like Pixar could actually do something with that idea. And it's kind of annoying that it may have gotten torpedoed because of like Rio, which I'm sure wasn't that great. I think my sister took my nephew to see that and she said that it was a pass. But yeah, I don't think that this is anything Pixar needs to worry about. I liked it. It's just kind of unfortunate, again, that they've been stuck with the stigma of being so good that they can, like, never live up to your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Scott Mendelson actually had a very good article on his personal blog, Mendelson's Memos, about how people were saying that Brave was, like, a DreamWorks film, and how, like, DreamWorks is the subpar Pixar, and everyone kind of uses that as, like, a defamatory remark.
Yeah, I read that in a lot of reviews.
Yeah, and he makes some very good points about how good DreamWorks actually has been, and that people focus too much on, like, Shark's Tale.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say go read that, because that can give you an idea of where I'm coming from. But that being said, I think it's safe for us to move on to our top selections for the week to come. I do want to say first, though, that if you're not going to go see Brave, I saw Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, and it's like 5 minutes shorter or longer than Brave, and it's fun. The 3D is pretty good, but I think even if you don't see it in 3D, it's like a surprisingly entertaining film. Like, and they do work in a lot of instances from his life in like a very real way, where like someone who's just drunk or disturbed enough could be like, yeah, it makes sense if it was vampires. Like, really strange to say that, but like the movie is actually well done and I enjoyed it. I know Jordan was dissing it last week. I disagree. I enjoyed Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. And I was most surprised about the movie and how much, like, you think it's just going to be like, oh, here's a guy named Abraham Lincoln in like the 1800s fighting vampires. They really work like slavery and the Civil War in there.
Sounds kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, like one of the main conceits of the movie, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say, is that like the entire reason behind slavery is vampires. Which I'm sure you could say, like, oh, it's such an intelligent allegory. Like, it's not. Like, they're literally saying vampires. And I'm sure there's, like, someone said, hey, this could work as an allegory. But I don't think their intention was to do that out loud. But, yeah, I would say check it out. If you don't like it, email me. Again, podcast@thefilmstage.com. Bring it on. See Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. But, yes, coming up in the next week, we have Magic Mike, the new male stripper movie by Steven Soderbergh. Even though they're not really pushing him in the marketing, which is weird to me. But I guess when you have Channing Tatum. I feel so bad because I like him as an actor, but heaven help me if I ever remember his name in the correct order. Get a first name. We also have Madea's Witness Protection, Ted, the story from Seth MacFarlane, who created Family Guy, about the stuffed bear that comes to life. Out in limited release, we have Beasts of the Southern Wild, Take This Waltz, which we talked about last week, and People Like Us. Danny, do you have any strong opinions about which of these should be checked out by people at home?
Well, I have seen Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Son of a bitch.
And I'm definitely on the bandwagon for that one.
I am the host of this show. Why am I not seeing
this? This was actually, I saw this a couple months ago. They had a free screening at my university.
Oh,
so it was kind of like an out of nowhere thing. And I loved it. It was kind of like a classroom auditorium, so it wasn't the biggest kind of screen.
Okay.
So I'm definitely going to like go see it again when it opens up near me. But yeah, I'm definitely on the bandwagon there. I haven't seen any of the major releases that are coming out, but People Like Us has been getting some decent reviews.
I'm unswayed about People Like Us from the marketing.
Yeah, I mean, the trailer is really kind of not good.
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah.
It could be good. It's one of those things I'll probably see on HBO or Showtime and be like, man, this is actually much better than I thought it was. Looking forward to Magic Mike.
Yeah, I am too.
Steven Soderbergh, you know, I liked Haywire earlier this year. And the guy's like a chameleon, you know, speaking about people who can change their style to fit the story.
Yeah, he's so interesting.
Yeah.
I actually watched Bubble recently.
Oh, how was that?
I loved it.
I wanted to see that so bad. That was one of the first films that was released in theaters non-VOD at the same time.
Yeah, I read about that after I saw it. I don't know if it's still on Instant or not, but it's really good.
Want to see that. Ted, I don't know about. Ted could be funny, but like...
It's another bear movie.
Yeah. Oh, I totally forgot to say, Archers, still in the mainstream. God, I love Archers. This one even had an homage to my favorite scene in a movie. I shouldn't say that. One of my favorite scenes in a movie. Errol Flynn splitting his arrow in The Adventures of Robin Hood.
Oh, well, we know you love that one.
Yeah, I love that movie. God, I'm going to watch that today as soon as we hang up. Yeah, Ted, I don't know what to say about Ted. It, like, there are aspects of the trailer that I find funny, but I'm concerned about a narrative holding them together.
Yeah.
So I'll probably check that out of, you know, morbid curiosity, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to like it. So I can't really recommend it. DVD, however, we have 21 Jump Street, Wrath of the Titans, Mirror Mirror, The Artist, and 1,000 Words, the Eddie Murphy movie that I don't think anyone really saw. Of those, did you see any, and would you want to see any of them again?
Yeah, 21 Jump Street is very funny, very entertaining.
Yeah.
Very clever.
I really like 21 Jump Street. So that'd actually be what I'd say.
Yeah. The Artist I liked. I don't remember how you... Did you love The Artist or...
I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Can't get into spoilers. There's a mid-movie sequence that occurs that I was really excited about, but it turned out to not be a new direction for the film. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, that would have made the movie incredible for me. And as it was charming and it was cute, but it was like, it wasn't even that long, but it still felt long.
Yeah. It did drag a lot in the second half.
Yeah.
Like, but
it's one of those movies where it's like, we get it. Like he's how much more do I have to see this person fall?
Yeah, exactly.
I understand.
That's another one kind of like Brave, where that narrative moment comes earlier than you'd think.
Yeah.
And it leads to you know, some scenes that feel a little bit repetitive.
Yeah, it does. You know, modulating a story is an important part of story.
Which 1,000 words does very well.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Kidding. Just kidding.
No one saw 1,000 words. Yeah, another thing about the artist is I feel like I don't really want to get into it that much. But the ending and the eventual revelation that comes with it, I was just like, it's not one of those things where I like was like, oh, it all makes sense now. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It's played in this way that, like, you know, it's like, oh, like, it's a big thing.
And right, it's like a grand reveal.
Yeah.
It feels like just kind of a cutesy kind of, like, input or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, see it. It won the Academy Award, so I guess, you know, if you're listening to this and you actually like film and, you know, you consider yourself one of those people who has to see everything of importance, I guess you have to see it before people forget that it won, like Gladiator. But yeah, I mean, it is okay. You can check it out. That brings us to our personal random recommendations. So what have you watched this week that you think people should check out?
Actually, we've been talking about we need to talk about Kevin a little bit. So I watched Lynn Ramsey's previous movie, Morvern Kallar, which is all the way back in 2002. And it's really good. It has an amazing performance by Samantha Morton. Huh. And she plays it's really thin on plot, as you could probably imagine, if you're somewhat familiar with Ramsey's style, because she's very kind of impressionistic. And it's like every scene is almost just a mood piece, like one mood piece after another.
Right.
And it's, again, a movie where she uses a soundtrack very intriguingly. But it has a really great performance that grounds it and gives it emotion. And it's just very interesting filmmaking.
Not having seen it, I cannot give any opinions on it. But it sounds good.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see this on DVD or is it available on Instagram?
Yeah, DVD. And the only thing I would say about it, though, is when you get the DVD, maybe throw the subtitles on, because it's Samantha Morton's not that bad, but there's a woman who plays her friend at a grocery store, and the accents are very heavy. So I'll just throw that out there, because
they might want to put subtitles on.
Yeah.
I went and saw, this isn't my recommendation, though this is still a movie you should check out. I saw The Wind That Shakes the Barley.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
At an independent theater in Washington, and it's good. I like it, but there was a moment of confusion in the beginning because it's the story of a bunch of Irish rebels, and this isn't your like normal Irish accents movie. Like, it's not like the Boondock Saints, I guess, like the American Irish. Like, these are like really hardcore, like guttural, like, or lilting, like, depending on if it's the North Irish, like, or South Irish, I should say. Like, the accents are intense. And I could see everyone in the theater around me, like a theater packed with people who all obviously knew what the movie was and were really excited, just like looking around, like, are there subtitles? Like, I have no idea what anyone's saying. So, yeah, I can definitely get behind that idea.
Yeah.
It's English, but it's not my English.
Yeah, and it's kind of a thing that, like, bugs you when it happens, because it's almost like I don't even want to watch this movie if I can't understand it. Like,
yeah. Luckily for me, I've, you know, huge, huge, like, fan of Irish culture, watched a lot of stuff, so I was like, oh, I get it. This makes perfect sense to me. Though even I had trouble at some points when things got really hectic. But for me, my movie recommendation, every Saturday, my roommates and I like to indulge in what we like to call Shitty Movie Saturday, where we try to find like overlooked or kind of crappy movies and watch them and see if they actually have any like fun value to them. So for instance, Hackers. Hackers is a pretty like stupid movie, but still a lot of fun. Today I watched Thrashin', which is the 1986 film starring Josh Brolin.
Oh dear.
As a skateboarder who is like with his like carefree friends have to take on a local gang of like mean skateboarders.
Jesus.
While winning a downhill race to get a, you know, sponsorship and also falling in love with like his biggest rival's sister. Like, it's on instant watch. It might be an hour and a half long. You should check it out, because it's like one of the first things I said when I started watching this film was like, holy shit, Josh Brolin has always been like 45 or 50. Like, this isn't one of those things where like Matthew Broderick, where you see him now, and if you've only ever gotten used to seeing him now, it's like jarring to see him as Ferris Bueller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is just straight up Josh Brolin. Like, it was so weird to see, like, his eyes still hold that like I have been to hell and back kind of thing.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, so Thrashin', I mean, it's cheesy ridiculous 80s crap, but it's pretty fun. So have a couple beers, invite over some friends with a good sense of humor, and check out Thrashin. Look out for the jousting scene. I don't want to spoil it for you, but it is so 80s that it is awesome. Ridiculous. Like, I said this, the 80s was the last time where physically beating the shit out of, like, an opponent was a legitimate way for a youth-oriented movie to end. Like, ridiculous.
Those days are gone.
They are gone. Like, now it's all like, oh, we have to get together and understand one another. And, like, 80s movies were like, no, Daniel-san's going to kick the shit out of the Cobra Kai kids. And when he's down on the mat unconscious, that's when it's ended. Not going to get that anymore. But Thrashin' delivers a little bit of that. So check it out. That is all for today, though. We will be back next week to talk about Magic Mike. And hopefully Nick will be back with us. But that's actually a little bit up in the air. But definitely after that, he'll be back. So for everyone who's missing Nick, you know, send him a tweet. Let him know you miss him. Let him know you care. But Danny, where can we find more of your stuff on the internet in the interim?
I have a personal blog at thekingbulletin.com and then on Twitter, twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
And I have a personal blog at dearfilm.net where I write letters to films. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/BrianJRowan. Again, spelled with an I. But that is all for this week. So thank you again for joining us. And we look forward to having you back soon. All right, and we are back. No, that's not right.